life of our family from the time that my father went out to Turkey. Friends and relations for some time had been asking me to write a book about our family, and I thought it was better to do the recording on tape. So here it is, and off we go, right from 1897, recording on tape. And the life of the Houghton family as a whole. You see, my mother and father went out to Turkey soon after they were married, around about 1880 or 1885 or thereabouts. Father working on the railway, a British company which was building a railway out in Turkey, and he stayed with them right up to, what was it now, about 1936 or 7. Well, he and mother went through many exciting times, and as I am the only one of the family left, my relations and friends have asked me different times about our life out in Turkey. And the exciting times that father and mother went through, in fact, all of us sometimes. They've also asked me about my own life in the army. First of all, a school out in Turkey. Then later on in the army, in the First World War and in the Second World War. Also about my two brothers who were killed in the First World War. And they've all been so interested in some of the incidents that I have described to them that they have asked me to write a book. Well, I'm sure that I have neither the qualifications to do so, nor are the incidents to be recorded of sufficient general interest to warrant the writing of a book. It is for this purpose that I'm trying to put down, perhaps, what should I say, the interesting odd incidents, etc., put it down on tape, which later on, if any of my relations feel might be of general interest, might make a bit of a story in a book or in that sort, well, they can get on with it and write a book from my tape recordings. Suppose one of the difficult snags that I shall come up against will be where to start and what to include and what to leave out. So I think I'd better just start by just giving an outline of the general family history in a matter of just a few words, and then from there we might concentrate on certain periods or certain places or certain happenings and expand and go into details about these. So let's start at the beginning. Mother and father were second cousins, at least I believe. Mother was a Miss Holton before she married a Mr. Holton, so she didn't change her name on marriage. She went out to Turkey with father, who had been given a job on a British railway which was in the course of being built, and it was called the Smyrna to Aydin Railway. A distant relation of my father's, Mr. Henry Smithers, was the director in London of the company, and he gave my father this job and sent him out to Turkey, to Smyrna. I don't know quite what job he got when he arrived in Smyrna, but my first recollections of my father as a railway servant was, I suppose, when I was about 8 or 9 years old. He was the storekeeper for the company. Because as storekeeper, he was really in charge of and had to keep close records of everything used on the railway. This, of course, included wagons and carriages, engines, rails, sleepers, everything that went to build a railway, coal stocks, as well as the ordinary, smaller, everyday things such as nuts and bolts and wire, oil and kerosene, paper, pens and pencils and ink even, I suppose, and how everything that is used on a railway by all various offices, various stations, and various engineering departments, the building of bridges and railways, the permanent railway line and so forth. Everything was more or less under his care, and he was responsible for it. Well, he was a station, he was a storekeeper for, oh, I suppose some 10 or 15 years. He was then promoted very suddenly, and it was a very nice promotion, from storekeeper to chief accountant. This was quite a jump. He remained as chief accountant for a number of years, and then the general manager, a certain Mr. Herbert Barfield, found that he needed an assistant general manager. And father was lucky enough to be given the job. And this again was a big step up, especially so as Mr. Barfield, who was not in very good health, insisted on spending 4 or 5 months of the summer in England to escape the heat. And my father was left as acting general manager. I will say here that all the big jobs on the railway, it was a British railway. All the big jobs were held by Britishers, such as locomotive superintendent, traffic superintendent, telegraph superintendent, storekeeper, chief accountant, etc., etc. All the big jobs were British held. And father was indeed lucky, and I think deservedly so, to get this plum job. He was exceedingly conscientious, and in the course of time, I gradually got to realize what an exceedingly capable and, shall I say, clever, or is it intelligent, man he was. He always thought out all the important decisions very carefully, and frequently made decisions which, on the face of it, were difficult to understand, but which in the long run turned out to be dead right every time. Being manager of a railway in Turkey is not quite the same thing as managing a railway in this country. For one had to deal with a head office, which in those days of no wireless and no telephone service actually in the country itself, in a country where it was difficult to communicate quickly with your directors, and many of the decisions had to be taken. Some of them were purely technical and railway job decisions. Quite a lot of them dealing with the Turks, with the Turkish government and the Turkish authorities, were semi-political, such as, for instance, Turkey was in several Balkan wars, and the railway frequently had the job of running many long trains purely for military purposes, long distances, carrying thousands of soldiers and general war materials, for which, incidentally, the Turks never paid in hard cash. And the railway simply had to carry all these expenses on their books as a debt owed to them by the Turkish government. And incidentally, these debts amounted to 2 or 3 million pounds sterling by the time my father left the railway. In fact, a year or so after he left the railway, the company was nationalized by the Turks. It was sequestrated, seized. No compensation was paid. And the Turks did not even pay the debt which they owed to the company, which I referred to before, several million pounds for carrying of troops 5, 10, 20, 30 years earlier. In the course of time, the railway had been extended from Smyrna to Aydin, the original railway, some 100 miles, which was eventually extended to Agadir, to some 300 miles, and later on, it was pushed on to Agadir. I'm sorry, I said Agadir before, but I meant to Dinair, from 100 miles to Aydin, some 300 miles to Dinair, and some another 100 miles after that to Agadir, on the shores of the great big lake of Agadir. Now, I think we'll leave the railway just temporarily and get on to my mother. She had gone out to Smyrna at the age of 21. She was country born and country bred and lived in Bures on the borders of Essex and Suffolk. The daughter of a nonconformist, a very big farmer, rather narrow-minded folk, and she had never left the country, and she suddenly found herself out in Turkey at the age of 21, not knowing the language, knowing nothing about foreign money, currency, food, habits, or anything. In a country where there was no electricity, in fact the Turkish sultans in those days would not allow electricity in the country at all, they thought it was an invention of the devil, and she found herself in this village of Bujar, some 5 miles outside Smyrna, no running water, just a well in the garden. And she seemed to cope admirably. But things couldn't have been very easy for her. And then the family started arriving. There were 5 children born. The firstborn was a little girl, Lillian. But she died at the age of 2 or 3, long before I came onto the scene. And then came my brother Francis, some 3 or 4 years later, and then Alfred, some 3 years after that, and then John, 3 years after that, and then I came along 4 years later. And as time went on, it was obvious to Father that the education of the 4 boys was going to present quite a problem. He was storekeeper on the railway, earning in those days a reasonable salary, but hardly one that would permit him to send 1, 2, or 3 boys to England to be educated. He wasn't keen on the local schools, the mostly religious schools. There were several French Roman Catholic schools. There's one English school run by an English clergyman, a Scotch school run by a Scotch missionary, and so on. So he thought of the idea eventually of starting a school of his own. He got hold of a big house in Bujar. Bujar was quite a town, although it was called a village, some 10,000 inhabitants. And he got hold of this house with some 30 or 40 acres of ground, and brought out from England two English schoolmasters. From France he brought out two French schoolmasters, and Greek and Turkish masters were recruited locally. We had some 10 or 12 boarders, and of course the English and French schoolmasters were also living in. There was mother and father and four of us, there's six of us, four schoolmasters, that's 10, and 10 or 12 boarders, that's some 20, 25 all told. So obviously mother had to have several servants helping, a cook, housemaid, assistant housemaid, and at least one man or boy to help with the hard work of pulling up the water from the well, chopping wood, fires and so on. But the school was very successful as a school. The curriculum had been very carefully worked out, and we were enabled to receive a fairly good education. Not only did we learn languages naturally by associating with French and Greek and German and Turkish boys, but also by the languages that were taught in the school. On top of that, commercial training was also incorporated in the curriculum, so that we learnt bookkeeping, typewriting, shorthand, and various other office qualifications, if you like, which in England would only be picked up or learnt or taught, like, at evening classes or special business training colleges. So on the whole, our education was fairly comprehensive and fairly good. For sport, we did a little cricket, a lot of football, and we ran the football team in the whole of Asia Minor, really, certainly in Smyrna. A cup was played for each year by all the big schools, and although ours was probably the smallest school, we held the cup for more years than any other school did. In fact, we held it for 2-3 years at a time, several times, perhaps then missed one year and then picked it up again the following year and carried on for another year or two and so on. But our football was good. We also had long holidays, and as boys we learnt to be fairly independent insofar that father, of course, carried on with his work on the railway. Mother was responsible for the school, running of the school. But in the summer holidays, we had plenty of scope for picnicking, very long walks up on the hills and the lower mountains. A lot of our picnics were on donkeys. Very fine donkeys too they were, so we learned to ride, and this was very useful to me later on in the army when I joined the cavalry as a private. I was able to sit a horse quite easily and naturally owing to my experience of riding donkeys. And we also did a good bit of swimming, fishing, rowing, sailing, and as a whole my youth and that of my brothers was a very complete one, both from the educational and the sporting point of view. And the experience gained by rubbing up against different nationalities, languages, habits, customs, etc., was very useful in later life. Now, going back to the railway, we carried on with our schooling and so on until my brothers went to various schools in England, and when I was the only one left at our own school, father decided that it would be much more economical to close the school and to send me to a local French school. I went to this French school. It was an excellent school, very high standards, run by Roman Catholic priests. But by that time, I was 12 or 13. I was too old to be influenced unduly by the Roman Catholic surroundings. In fact, I was older than that. I was 14 when I went to this French school. I stayed there for 3 or 4 years. Then I went on to the railway. My brother John had been the general manager's secretary, but had left about 6 months before to take up his studies in England. He was going in for the Indian Civil Service. So I left school at the age of 17 and went and took his place as the general manager's secretary on the railway. That, of course, was very short-lived, because I started in June, end of June, and the First World War started on the 4th of August, 1914. Turkey didn't come into the war just then. But then, round about November, Turkey was dragged in by the Germans on their side. And the exciting part of one's life began. It started this way. Turkey came to the war, and about a day later, a message was sent by the Governor General of Smyrna, saying that he and the commander-in-chief, a certain Pertev Pasha, would be calling on the general manager of the railway that afternoon at 3 o'clock with the purpose of taking over the railway and giving the manager his orders to how he was to carry on. This was all very fine, but